Opinions expressed on ACB Media are those of the content creators and should not be assumed to reflect product endorsements or the views of the American Council of the Blind, its elected officials, or its staff.
The last time I had to come to Sacramento on the Greyhound bus. Well, first of all, it's very, very crowded, and you have to wait in line, and there are people that are coming by, and they hit you in the leg with a suitcase, and it goes, excuse me, and so finally, they make an announcement. And nobody can understand a thing they say, but it doesn't matter. By that time, you're so hot and tired, you're going to get on the bus regardless of where it goes. So you get out there, and first of all, you get on the bus, and it's so hot that you can hear the metal cracking. And always right behind you, it's never two or three seats away, or one away, or anything, right behind you, there's always a lady, and there's a baby crying. It's going, right behind you. And then the bus driver gets on, he starts counting the number of people on the tickets. Go, 1, 2, 3, 4. And he goes, what the? He's in the front of the bus and starts coming in. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And he said, excuse me, everybody, but we got one too many passengers here. We got to see all your tickets. Well, there's always a little old lady that never can remember. Oh, dear, I don't know what I've done with my ticket. Oh, I was here a minute ago. I didn't go. And she finally finds it. And they finally find out the reason for it. It's some blind guy out of 2-1 that caused all the problem. So the bus driver gets on and he closes the door and just about blows your brains out when he does it. And he goes just a little teeny distance, and I don't know why they do that. They go a little teeny distance and they stop, and it sounds something like this.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to the future. We're at the 2024 California Council of the Blind Virtual Conference and Convention. My name is Sarah Harris. I'm the first vice president of the California Council of the Blind, and I'm so excited to be here as the presiding officer for this session because I love transportation stuff. It's so much fun to talk about, to work on, and everything. And what about opening this up with Al Gill? Wasn't that fantastic, guys? It was great to hear him do his shtick that everybody talks about all of the time. And I want to thank Larry Gassman out there because he found it for me. I couldn't find it, and he did. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And so today we're going to have a great panel that's going to be moderated by David Mandel, and I'm going to have him introduce his panelists here in a minute. Following that, I'm going to open it up, and when we open it up, we're going to talk about something different. You know, we're always talking about the bad parts of paratransit and the complaints and everything, but we're going to tell funny stories about paratransit because that's going to be the way that we can really turn a negative into a positive in a sense, because a lot of times, you know, we're complaining, we have all of these frustrations, but there are some really funny things that happen while riding paratransit, let's be honest. And so that'll be a time that we're going to open it up and allow folks to share theirs as well. And so I do want to start with the door prize if Lisa is here, and I'm not sure that she is yet. No, Nope, she didn't make it yet, and that's okay. So what we'll do is we'll come back in a little bit, maybe David, at some point in your panel when we hear Lisa come on, we'll kind of just stop for a minute and have a door prize because those are fun to give away. Does that sound good to you?
Absolutely.
Awesome, awesome. And
Because
then,
I want to win.
right. I
Yeah,
know I
that's
won
right.
last night. I couldn't believe it. And so I want to remind folks though that don't raise your hand until we open it up for questions, because when you're raising your hand, lowering your hand, it doesn't make a difference because we're still not gonna start for questions yet. And when you raise your hand, leave it up. Don't move it, because if you raise your hand, lower your hand, it's gonna move where you're at in line to be called on. So just a little trick for you all to know. But without further ado, I'm so excited to introduce my good friend David Mandel, who loves transportation. I think a little bit more than I do even, which is so funny. To introduce his panel and let's kick it off. Go for it, David.
Thank you so much, Sarah, Madam President-elect. And I don't know about loving transportation, but we need it. It's a necessity, and I want to make sure that it works for us. So today we're going to talk about effective strategies, if there are such things, for filling out a paratransit eligibility application and getting the most out of a paratransit agency interview. And the reason we're doing it is that even though paratransit's been around for eons, there are still people who really freak out when they want to, they want to get paratransit, and the agency says, "Sorry, you're just not eligible. We won't accept you." And they don't understand why. They don't understand the process. And I remember years ago when people used to say, "Now make sure that you don't let them know that you can stand and wait for a bus. Don't let them know that you can ride a bus because they'll never be accepted." And that made it very scary in a way. But things have changed and things are changing. And we have a wonderful panel here to discuss paratransit eligibility today. We first have Shanir Derrick, who's paratransit specialist with HandyRide in Fresno. Welcome, Shanir. Want to say
Hey,
hi?
what's going on?
And we have Christine Fitzgerald, community advocate with the Silicon Valley Independent Living Center in San Jose. Christine,
Perfect.
welcome.
Thank you,
Glad to
David.
have you here. And Fiona Hinza, who's Director of Public Policy with the Independent Living Resource Center of San Francisco. Glad to have you here as well, Fiona.
Thank you for having me. Looking forward to it.
So I think the first question I'm going to ask Shanir. And this may not be an easy question to answer, but when you're looking at eligibility as when the paratransit agencies are looking at paratransit eligibility, what are you looking for? What criteria do you base eligibility on? Obviously, you have to have a disability, but there are other issues as well.
Well, as long as basically does it impair them from using the fixed route, generally what we look for. Do they have like a serious issue using this fixed route? And of course, the majority of our clients cannot at all. And then there's, there's some that do have an extreme difficulty using it, only maybe like on a certain route, if it's going like straight down one main street. Now, I know for a lot of people, it's just transferring, or if they have to go through more than one bus, that's a lot of the big problem from people that have to use both. So I'm looking for the severity, the extreme need to use it compared to a city bus or any other way of getting around.
Are there some disabilities where, let's say, a paratransit agency will say, "Sorry, you're not disabled enough"? Because I've heard of people who have not been accepted who have deaf disabilities.
Well, one thing, just from being in my position and reviewing them myself, and I've just heard stories of previous reviewing. And I bet because I know that Fresno used to be that way. And even now, I was just talking with my coworker about this because we were reviewing some of the mail outs for people that need to renew their eligibility. And I was telling them how they would very, what's the word looking for? Just weren't paying attention, or they just weren't being mean about it. I don't know, but they were marking a lot of people with permanent disabilities as temporary. So with ours, you know, for permanent disabilities, we have the little short app, which is just to update their contact info. And then the, you know, our longer application is, you know, like the original one when you're first applying to where you need your doctor's information. You know, the last three pages are for a licensed healthcare professional. And so they weren't really being attentive to who is actually a permanent disability. So we're just sending a lot of them out to a lot of people with permanent disabilities. They can do the whole doctor's information and all that. And yeah, that does happen.
But everybody has to fill out the long application at first, right?
Yeah, at first one, of course.
Yeah.
We want to, the big thing is we do want to verify that the disability is, you know, legit. Cause you know, you don't just want anybody, especially nowadays. I mean, we get people with all kinds of crazy stuff like, oh, I don't want to pay for gas or I can't, just wild stuff like that. It's like, wait, hold on. No, we can't just accept you because you don't want to pay for gas. You know, that's unfortunate. Definitely. But that's not a disability.
And speaking about proof of disability, I was wondering, Fiona or Christine, when you work with people in your independent living centers, what kind of proof, I mean, is it really necessary to get a doctor's letter always for every disability? Can I'm sorry.
For us in San Francisco, they do allow other medical professionals. So like a therapist or a chiropractor or so it doesn't necessarily have to be a doctor. I forget the exact term, but I think other medical professionals. So there are alternative ways. And one other thing I was going to add to what Shanir was saying, he did a wonderful job of covering it, I think. But I think one other thing to know is you don't always necessarily not have to be able to take the bus. You can not be able to take the bus, like in certain circumstances, like if it rains. So I would, even if you have a certain circumstance in which you wouldn't be able to take the bus, but you can take the fixed route bus some of the time, I would still recommend that you at least try to put an application in, even if you're not sure you're going to get it necessarily.
And we have the same kind of issue down here in Santa Clara County, where it's always recommended that there be some kind of medical professional to provide proof of disability. But, you know, even we can, as an agency, provide some kind of some level of authentication that this person does have a disability. Although, because we take people at their word, and we do not require them to show us that they have a disability to receive our services, they don't really get services. But, you know, at the same time, we do ask, do you have a disability, just to get the statistics. The other thing that we have down here, and it's along the same lines as what Fiona had mentioned, where there are certain disabilities that don't do well in the heat or in the rain or whatever. A lot of folks that have, say, MS, don't do at all well with extreme weather. They do much better with more direct routes to and from wherever they go. Now, a person like myself, where not only do I have low vision, I also use a wheelchair, so trying to make sure I don't wind up in a hole is super critical. And so I much prefer going from door to door to make sure I don't wind up going off of a beaten path.
Shanir, did you have something else to add? I thought I heard your voice.
Yeah, I was going to say, along with both of them said, what we do call it is now, it's not just a doctor. We do just call them licensed healthcare professional. And on ours, it does have a list. So it could even be like a licensed social worker, nurse, or even orientation and mobility specialist.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah, so just someone that can like verify that it is a disability, you know, a legit disability. So no, it's not just medical doctor.
So if I'm blind, I don't have to go, you know, find an eye doctor or an ophthalmologist to get an exam. If I've been blind all my life, I could have a rehab counselor or a social worker send proof to you
that
I'm blind. And that's acceptable. Yeah. Okay, that's really good to know.
But with some of the wild, I've seen some pretty wild reasons of not being disabled to where I'm for having some kind of verification. Because like I said, you need to get some wild requests that say, oh, I just don't like waiting for the city bus or, you know, some wild stuff that like people are, we do get people that are not disabled that try to apply just because of some pretty crazy reasons. So I'm in favor of having some sort of verification, at least at first.
Absolutely.
And I have I'm very happy that we did start the whole just the short app for renewals though for permanence, because I thought that was wild. That was something both me and Sarah were going through. It was like our condition's not changing, so why are we still having to get our doctor's information?
Yeah. Our local system here in the East Bay Paratransit is now only if they know that your disability is permanent, they're only asking to update our emergency contacts and to make sure that we're still disabled. And that's it.
Yeah.
They don't ask anything. Yeah.
Yep. Or for mobility aids change, like use a different mobility aid. Stuff like that. Yeah.
It was funny because one agent, when I was reapplying, they said, you use a folding cane? It doesn't say that in your file. And I said, does it matter what kind of white cane?
I think that too, because a lot of the RBI crowd, they'll put cane. And I'm like, you know, the folding canes are pretty much unnoticeable.
Right. Yeah.
You know, unless you got the NFB cane or something.
Right. Exactly.
Anybody in pleasure, whether you have a cane or a dog, that's
So when you're filling out an application, you have to answer all these questions, the long application. I mean, it can be really hard to figure out because you don't know what to say. I mean, if you say the wrong thing, then it's going to trigger a no, you know, to the agency. You know, obviously this person can get along, this person can deal with buses and subways and whatnot. And, you know, so to what extent can you say, I can ride a bus, I can't ride a bus, I can't use fixed route transit at all? Or, I mean, you really have to demonstrate that you're totally helpless, even if you aren't. And, you know, I mean, I've had this, I've heard about this for years and years, where people just didn't know what to do. And some people wouldn't apply for paratransit because they didn't want to deal with it.
No, I've got a lot of calls where people ask me that. And I totally get it. And that's what I told them. So I understand, you know, it's better to be safe than to worry about getting out. I understand that totally.
I mean, are there questions I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's always better to discuss. See, when I get people into the office, I usually sit down with them and discuss the kinds of disabilities that they have going.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, I know of several people with learning disabilities who also use wheelchairs and such. And so I will discuss with them, well, let's take it one step at a time. Which would you say is the more involved disability? Why is it that you don't feel comfortable in taking the bus? Mm-hmm. And I'll have the person say something like, because of my learning disabilities, trying to read maps, trying to negotiate from A to B to C to D doesn't happen well. So it's far better for me to get the paratransit to take me exactly to where I need to be and not have to get lost. And that's what we go with, you know.
Exactly.
We will back that up by talking about, okay, on top of that, because this person uses a wheelchair, manual wheelchair, trying to get around from, you know, bus to bus and all of this, is equally not going to work. So no matter how you slice it, paratransit is the better and more safe way to go.
Mm-hmm. So if I want to, you know, I'm going to fill out this application, but I want to let paratransit know that I can, as a blind person, I can ride some buses, you know, if it's, let's say, a simple route or I know that I can get off and I'm fairly close to the destination. But if I'm in an area that is totally unfamiliar to me, I'm afraid that I won't know where I am, and I'll spend so much time trying to figure out where I am that I might get lost. You know, to what extent is that permissible to say in unfamiliar areas, I would rather use paratransit?
Typically, that would be considered a conditional eligibility, which honestly, since I've been working at Facts Handy Ride, I just threw conditionals out the window. So I just pretty much I just accept everybody as unconditional.
Yeah,
because it's like, who's the reservationist? They're never going to be able to discern themselves the way that things are going. They're never going to have the right discernment to say, okay, it's dark right now, so this person can ride, or you know, it's too cold or something like that. So I haven't even dealt with that. So I pretty much for me, I just consider everybody unconditional once they are.
Well, and the other part of it is, who the heck is going to know whether you're going to ride the bus on a particular day or not, unless you,
I know one thing they used as far as ambulatory. Oh my bad, let me be talking over you, but I know for walking, one thing they would use is distance. So it's like, oh, okay, bus stops are going to be a certain distance. You know, the bus stop is more than 100 yards. I'm like, the reservationists aren't going to pay attention to that. So that's why I just completely throw that out. So they're disabled. They're disabled, and it's all unconditional conditions.
That's what I was wondering, when they see your file and they see certain things that are marked or notes that are in the file.
No.
I have never seen our reservationist deal with those.
Yeah, that's what I've dealt with.
Yeah. In practicality, the reservationist, well, they shouldn't challenge you
challenge you. Yeah.
I've seen it on older notes, like when I'm reviewing clients that come up, and just from previous things, I'll see it on the notes where it says, you know, conditional eligibility if the bus stop is more than 100 yards or blah blah blah. And I'm like, this is stupid. You know, this is not fair. You know, this doesn't count for me.
Several years ago, our local paratransit agency wanted to basically eliminate certain trips, numbers of trips and types of trips, and that people were so angry. They got so many calls and letters that they just completely, now they don't even deal with conditional anymore.
That's what I'm saying. It's not feasible. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, I get where the agencies are coming from, but it's just not practical or feasible. And actually, they did that in Fresno. They tried to limit it to, like, what was it, Sarah? Like 60 rides for a pass?
Yeah, exactly. It was 60 rides.
And I think it actually says that on the pass. I think it might actually say that, even though they haven't counted it for years. Like, I mean, how long have I been on? I've been on Handy Ride for almost 5 years, and I've never done it. We're probably going on like 7-8 years to where they've never counted how many rides people have scheduled.
Christine?
None of that makes sense, because they're losing money in the long run.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, are there other considerations that people should keep in mind when they're filling out applications that they should be careful about, or, you know?
Attendance. Personal care attendance. If they need help, like a personal care attendant, that's one thing. And I understand that. And this is one thing we try to go over during our orientations, or what some people call interviews. We call them orientations. I'm assuming they're the same thing, but we try to clarify if people really do need help, because I understand that people don't understand that. Even the doctors don't. A lot of times they'll say, I don't need they'll check no for a personal care attendant. Or the doctors will say, no, this person doesn't need assistance. And then we actually talk to them, they actually do. So if you need help guiding, mobility aids, sometimes people aren't clear with what mobilities they use. So even up until they're scheduling their trips, you know, they don't know how to let the reservation know what they're actually been using.
And, so in other words, to make sure that they know that you might need an attendant, what about a blind person who might need a guide, but not every time? That's another question that we haven't solved.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, I get that. Even with attendance, like I had one lady that was, she was actually upset that I assigned an attendant to her. She's like, I don't want an attendant. I was like, well, what's the option? Like, the days you do or don't want one, that's totally fine. Mm-hmm. She's like, well, I don't want an attendant on there. Okay.
And that is really the thing to emphasize, is to say, put it down as you need an attendant, but, you know, make sure that everybody understands it's not all the time. So it's at your
it's optional.
Not there.
Yeah. totally optional.
I understand that here locally, we're told if you need an attendant, you get one, and you're expected to use that attendant or that guy. No. If you don't use it, and I need to talk to them to because we need to straighten that out, because there are times that I have needed a guide occasionally and in a building that was huge and I had no idea where to go, and there was no one that I could ask to go with me. So I wanted to bring a guide along, and they said no because you never signed up for an attendant. So yeah, it's interesting.
I think that speaks to, in addition to like what we were saying about the application, that if there is some component of the disability that you think is going to preclude you from prevent you in some way from taking the bus, or if the attendant helps you, you should go ahead and put it down. You should go ahead and put it down, A, on the application, and B, when you make a reservation, that you need an attendant. So,
remembering that you can keep that optional.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm going to shift gears a little bit and go to this interview process. And I know I've talked to people who are just like, oh my God, what do I say? If I say the wrong thing, absolutely they're going to refuse me. So how do I make them understand that I absolutely need paratransit? So how should people prepare, or can they even prepare for an interview?
So I'd like to offer an idea that I did for my own personal thought process. Okay, so as I said, I'm visually impaired. So before I had the actual in-person interview, I submitted the application, I did the phone interview, and they also came out to do a physical interview with me. And what I did is, in between that phone interview and the time that they came out, I thought to myself, okay, where can I take this person to make sure they understand what my issues are? And I thought, aha, I have the perfect street. So what I did was we went on a walk, and I purposely took them on a walk, whereas there's this big, huge hole in the sidewalk. And I've always known about it. It's been there for ages, but I took them there on purpose, and I said, okay. And I did the same thing for cane training as well. I said, okay, take a look at this hole. Now, because of my visual disability, I don't feel comfortable walking around on sidewalks of any kind, really, because I can't always tell that there is a hole. Now, somebody using a big, heavy power wheelchair like I do can't get out of a hole. So I'm trying to make sure they understand that there are certain reasons why somebody with a visual impairment probably should not be required to take the bus alone, that they should be allowed to have and sign up for paratransit and be able to take it to where they need to go in order to protect their safety. And then this is also the same kind of thing that I've done with other consumers with different issues, looking at, heat or, time to stretch out, that kind of thing. It's whatever that individual has going in their lives that's going to affect their ability to function in the first place. Mm-hmm. If they're stopped too long, that doesn't work. If they need to be out of the weather, quicker, obviously taking the bus doesn't work. So that's how I help them. I try to help them understand the kind of things that affect them. And these are the things that they need to bring up in that interview.
Mm-hmm. Fiona or Shanir, anything to add about that, preparing for the interview?
Yeah, pro tip. I think since, I believe I'm hearing that most of us are disabled here. Mm-hmm. Just don't even mention any conditional situations. If you say you have problems walking, just tell me you have problems walking. I mean, let's keep it real. My opinion is don't count on any non-disabled person to understand those situations to where it is okay for you to see or walk or, or to understand something. You know, just tell them straight up, I have problems walking or I have problems seeing.
You mentioned a really good point, Shaneer, that I think the big problem is that the majority of people who work in these agencies don't have the lived experience. They don't really understand disability. And a lot of us are thinking now, in some ways, why can't agencies who serve that serve people with disabilities make some of these eligibility decisions? I knew somebody who had a heart problem and was using oxygen and all that, and he was turned down. This was years and years ago. I don't know why they did it, but they would not let him have paratransit. Wow. And it was the weirdest thing that I never, you know, and they didn't get it. And, you know, I would like to subject some of these people to living the way we live as disabled folks. I want to see them, you know, get along.
Oh, I was like,
you know, for a day or two.
It's like me and Sarah, we joke around with a lot of our city officials and this, my bosses and stuff, you know, let's strap them in a wheelchair and blindfold them. Let them ride around for 2 hours. See how they feel about it. Because, you know, they're always saying, oh, it's okay. You know, we're non-traumatic performance. You know, they tell us it's okay. And especially, oh, my God, during the summers. I'm not looking forward to summer.
Yeah,
you never keep those vehicles cool. And it is torturing those things. And I'm like, I've been there. It's been a constant argument. And, you know, the mechanics, they just turn on the buses in the shop. And like, oh, look, it works okay. And it's like, no, let's ride around that thing. Go take it around the block a little bit during the summer when it's 105. It gets pretty hot. Yeah, take it around the spinner. Spin around the block a couple of times, even though it's 105, and let me know how it is. It is brutal on those things when they heat up. And
Fiona,
you guys don't get it.
Sure, I'll add something real quick.
Sure.
We don't have the in person coming out to meet with you. Like we don't have that layer that Christine has where there.
We don't have that either.
In person interview. In-person interview, that seemed a little invasive to me, but that's neither here nor there.
We don't do it either.
So, but what I would say is, before you have the interview, one thing that you could do to sort of help you prepare is to read the written application that you submitted, so that when you have the interview, you're consistent with what you wrote on the application, and also able to supplement, like, with something. If there is something that comes up for you that you forgot, or if that is related to what you wrote on the application, you can bring it up there, but try to stick as close to you can to your original story that you wrote on the
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Great, great point. Beautiful point.
I'd also like to add one other thing.
Okay, Christine.
So, again, you know, based off of what happened directly with me, be prepared to contact your attorney if you need to, which I actually had to do. So here's what happened. Sent in the application, did all the interviewing, yada, yada, yada. And on the day that I was supposed to have received notice that I either got it or didn't, I got a call saying, nope, you're not going to get it. And this is after I called my my ophthalmologist that confirmed, yes, she does have glaucoma. And she does have, you know, very low vision, visual acuity is X, Y, and Z, which I can't remember now. But anyway, they were going to deny me. And I said, hold on to that thought and let me call them. I'll be right back. Called my lawyer, said, hey, Larry, would you do me a favor? Would you call the Access Paratransit and put the fear of God into them and get them to understand that, yes, in fact, I do have several different disabilities, and that I need paratransit. And all of a sudden, when they call back about 20, 30 minutes later to Access, oh, magic, you got it.
You know what?
Be prepared.
I actually have something to add on to that.
Okay.
Are you done? Is it okay to go?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. One thing I noticed that really worries me with the doctors doing their portion is, yeah, let your doctor know the seriousness of it. Understand it. Because another question we have is the condition temporary or permanent? And try to let your doctor know, you know, emphasize the severity or if it is or not temporary or permanent, yeah. You know, because I believe it's going to go off of that. And just make sure they understand what they're signing for you. Because I see a lot of these doctors, I don't even think it's the doctors, sometimes it's just the assistants or, you know, so yeah, make it clear to what they're filling out for you and how it's going to
affect
you.
And make sure they get it back to them on time. That's where the problem
yes.
is.
Oh my God. That's a key.
Oh, I've had some kind of missing. They're like, I took it to the doctor and we never get it on the cycle.
Fiona? Yeah.
Well, no, I was just going to add to the doctor portion of this because for ours also, the way they structure it is you don't know what the doctor fills out on the form because they have to send it directly to the
That's
office.
That's right.
So, so before you send it to your doctor, let the doctor know that it's coming and kind of try to help them.
Yeah.
Not tell them what to write, but like give them an idea of what you're looking for because. Yeah. You really have no control over what they write, and you can't correct. You're not able to correct the record. So
yeah, and
make sure
a lot of
they
times,
get it over to them as fast as they can.
Yeah.
And I've actually been in person when I've seen my doctor do mine. They just jot through those things like, oh, okay, oh, here you go. It's like, oh, okay, you know, there.
They might actually write something that's detrimental to your ability to get become
ill. Well, what I see a lot is they downplay a lot of conditions. Or they're referring to another one. I've seen people with multiple conditions and then they write down the one that's temporary. You know, somebody had a broken femur, but they're also developmentally disabled. And it's like, oh, it's temporary. I was like, okay, maybe the broken femur is
No.
I'm like, okay, the femur is temporary, but yeah, they still have the cognitive issues.
Yeah, developmental disability doesn't go away. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, so also maybe try to pick a professional a medical professional that knows you. If there's a professional that is not your doctor but that knows you better and can speak to your conditions better, maybe that's the person to go to and not your doctor.
Well, I see what I saw a lot during quarantine, the corona stuff, and all that was people were just going to whatever doctor they can get. People that did have more than one doctor, just wherever they can get to fill it out the fastest. And I saw that. That's where you obviously the doctors, and then a lot of them put it. They said, I'm not familiar. This is my first time seeing this patient, and I'm too familiar with their condition. And so, yeah, that can be kind of scary.
Yeah, I have
I'm sorry, David, but that really can work because I actually did that kind of thing when I actually, had a form filled out so I could ride a horse when I was in going to school in Chico. I had to get a doctor's note, and I went to a local clinic and said, you know, I know you don't know me, but I need this filled out, and I'll be happy to, you know, help you understand, you know, what my disability is, what I can do, what I can't do, whatever you need in order to get this filled out. And they did it, and I got in, so it can work. It's just you have to work very closely with that individual person.
Yep. I have one more question. How long, let's say someone is going to have foot surgery, so maybe for 6 weeks they might not be able to walk. How long should it take? Can they get paratransit temporarily, or is it going to take too long for them to be able to get it?
I do it. If I get a lot of temporaries. Actually, I had quite a few this week. And if it's 6 months, sometimes I'll be generous and just add a couple on there or a year.
No, but I mean, how long does it take for them to go through the eligibility?
Oh, from the beginning to the end, about 90 days.
Oh.
We have.
Wow.
90 days. Wow. No, we got 21.
We have 21 too over here.
Mm-hmm.
And
at least that's what they tell us.
And I've always been told that's our regulation that we have to get it reviewed within 21 days, and my office we usually get them turned around by like 2 weeks. from the time of the applications.
It might be a little bit less.
Oh, yeah. That would be great. 2 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah, that's our average. That's our average here in Fresno, but that's me. I'm going through applications every day.
Yeah. Okay, so do you have anything else any of you like to add before we go to questions?
If I could stress one of my earlier points, because one of my biggest things is, like I mentioned earlier, you know, if you're disabled, don't worry about them, you know, don't worry about mentioning any conditional situations. Like if you're blind, just tell them that you're blind. You know, don't say, oh, but I can see in this type of situation. And just don't even mention it. Just say, I have problems seeing, so I have trouble finding spots. You know, don't even worry about saying which bus stops you do have trouble seeing or you can't, because, you know, it's another business. I feel like it's just nobody's business, you know what I'm saying?
So the blindness should be enough to be able to get a conditional injury. Okay.
Yeah, don't put your conditions in anybody else's understanding. Okay. I feel like it's nobody's business.
I love it. Yeah.
There should also be another basic understanding, and that is that I have had folks where they really want to do it since they have the same driver every single time. And I understand that, where I can appreciate where that's coming from. That's not always possible.
Not
but it is important to at least indicate that on the application, primarily because, again, if it's related to your disability, if it's a case of someone who has autism or something where the consistency of seeing the same person day after day, that's going to help them stay calm. That should be noted.
Yeah, yeah, one thing that I've noticed is that a lot of developmentally disabled people really rely on routine. And when their routine is shattered, it is really traumatic for them. And a lot of paratransit agency folks don't get it.
Right.
They don't understand it. And how do you all deal with that? How do you deal with it, Shaneer? How does your agency?
Well, I know as far as the three topic conditions I look for: visual, ambulatory, and cognitive.
Uh-huh.
So when it comes to cognitive issues, that's one main thing I look for. I know that is a problem, especially I used to be an independent living counselor in my last job.
Yeah.
And I totally understand how that is for them. And my dog is very playful right now. I don't know if he's being too loud. Let me know.
No, can't hear him.
I don't know if you guys can hear him in the background. He's shaking. Nope. He's playing with his toys and stuff. Yeah, I do look for that, because I know there's an issue when they're waiting for city buses. You know, if they had something different, it's a different driver, or something looks different, they don't want to get on, or they'll get afraid and they won't want to get on or something. So that's what I look for: impaired judgment, if they have memory problems, concentration, orientation, inhibition, any of that's impaired, that's what will make them qualified for me. You know, it's a cognitive issue.
And can I add another thing?
Uh-huh.
I get for something with, you know, some kind of cognitive difficulty. We went through a changeover from being outreach to a new service, which is now access. Same paratransit service, of course, but the actual look of the van, delivery of the van changed. And that was a major concern, again, for folks with IDD issues. And one thing that I would strongly suggest for anyone, you know, if they need it, that maybe they could do an in-person visit at the storage area where the vans are, so that the person can come and look at the van, get a feel for the van, get into the van. None of the van is there, and it's just the same as it always has been, just a different look.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I think that's a great accommodation.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else y'all to add? Okay.
I think something in the vein of, I don't know if we're just talking about mental disabilities or not, but in the whole discussion in general, something in the vein we're all talking about is don't hesitate to ask, have somebody help you. Like, if you need an advocate, or just like, I know a lot of people that have their care providers or guardians or something help fill them out, or they'll sit in with during the orientations with them. So if you need somebody to help you understand or whatever, to sit with you or fill out, sit with you through the whole process.
That's support.
Yeah.
And that goes double for when they get the receipt letter, saying whether they were approved or denied.
Oh, yeah.
I have had people get this letter where the wording, because of the legal beagles, the wording scares the tar out of the person.
Oh, yeah.
And
I've seen that.
I basically have to, get them to sit back down, calm down. Let's look at the wording again. Let's break it down. What they're saying is, if you want to take the bus, you can, but they are not going to restrict you. And we even went so far as to call access. And again, having the person in question talk to them directly, saying, "What are you trying to tell me? Please tell me here in the presence of my, with my advocate, so I can better understand what you're trying to tell me." And if, with those two things, that really helped them calm down and understand, "Oh, I am okay. I am still going to get the same paratransit service. They were just letting me know. If I want to take fixed route, I can."
All right. I think we're going to go to questions now. But Sarah, what do you think? Do you think we can pause very briefly for a door prize, or should we take questions now?
Did Lisa make it in?
Yeah, Lisa, I thought I heard it say that Lisa arrived. Am I wrong? Maybe voiceover was not reliable. Lisa, are you here?
Just say something about the Dallas Cowboys and she'll call.
Oh my goodness. No, I
No, she's
don't think
not here.
I don't think she made it here. That
Okay,
just means
voiceover reliable.
more door prizes for the banquet,
Yeah,
right?
that's right.
And
Okay.
Aren't the Dallas Cowboys the worst team in football history?
Oh,
I'll try to make her pop up.
Now, for those people who might be listening on ACB Media, you
Oh, that's a
know.
legendary.
Well, that's why we play the disclaimer at the beginning of the day
That's
that these
right.
opinions do not come from ACB at
It's true.
any
Yeah, we don't endorse.
rate.
Well, Lisa's definitely not on here because she would have let me have it if she was on here.
Definitely, definitely.
All right. So, Desi, do we have any hands?
Yes, we do.
All right.
Sheila Gunn, go right ahead.
Hey there.
Hello.
Sheila.
Hey. David, you should not be surprised that I'm here, and I'm sorry that I missed your thing the other day, and I will have to get it on an archive because I definitely want to hear it.
Yeah.
I don't have a question, but I have a couple comments to make. I came in a little late, and I'm sorry. But East Bay Paratransit is extremely patronizing. And before I go further down that road, I will say I have a PCA on my thing, which is what they call an attendant, my personal care attendant assistant, I don't know. And I don't use them very often, but I have it there for when I need it. And I ride paratransit when I don't know where I'm going once I get there, or I will be starting out at a place where I don't know where the bus stops are, or maybe I sort of do, but I can't, I know there won't be people to ask or whatever. And I have, I'm totally blind, but I also have cerebral palsy and my stuff is worse in the winter. Like I really, I'm surprised I don't audibly creak in the winter because it's like that. And so, right. And so there are times when, I know exactly where the Ed Roberts campus is. It's right over a BART station. And if you don't know what Ed Roberts and BART are, don't worry about it. It's within 3 minutes walk of a train, and I know exactly what the route is. But if it's raining, but if I'm tired, but if I know that I just want to get from door to door, and the buses have been unreliable in Alameda County lately, and I'm on work time, so I just want to get on and be in one seat and then get off, and I'm at the door. If it helps my stress level, which is not on my sheet of things that I have, because it's a stress level, but I don't have a mental health disability at all, but it's just,
Yeah.
And that's fine. And I think, but the thing I wish that we would talk more about, and you guys have alluded to it, but I want to say it in straight up terms, is we need advocacy with these paratransit agencies. I'm tired of being asked every time if I'm going to use my white cane. I don't leave my house without my white cane. And I get it that sometimes things are different and some people have differences, but I would love it if I just said, look, could you just automatically put a checkbox in this for me? That's not going to change. If I come without my cane, then test me for a cognitive disability because there's something wrong.
Sheila, you're right. They always ask you, what are you going to use? And it's really none of their business.
Well, that's just it. Well, wait a minute, David. It's none of their business in one sense. But if the driver knows they're looking for someone with a white cane, then they're not going to hassle other people without. Okay. So today I'm using my walker. Tomorrow it's my wheelchair. Right. I'm cold and I'm hurting and I can't, you know, so. I understand differences and yin and yaw, but I do think that if someone says, look, I'm going to have a cane, just don't ask me that anymore. Don't ask me.
Right, that's what I'm saying. You know it once, it's in your file. That's all they need. That's
right.
What I meant.
Right.
I have to ask you every time.
It's yeah, I get that. Right. I get the space type. But... So. Mm-hmm. Canes, I understand, but walkers and wheelchairs. Mm-hmm. It just comes down to space types, like how much space are we going to need? Are we going to need that extra space?
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Canes,
and
I
get
told
that.
You, yeah, the canes. Yeah, canes.
And I get
matter.
That. But there should be a way when something's not going to change. There should be a way of saying, look, please don't bother me. We could do this reservation in 3 minutes if you just would quit asking me all the redundant questions we don't need.
There's a lot of truth to that, but there's also another truth to it, and that is that there's a default. So here in Santa Clara County, the default is a manual chair in my case. I very rarely use my manual chair. I use a power chair most of the time. So
you should be able to change that on your file.
No. What I'm saying, it is there on the file. But what I am saying is, since it's automatically set, when they bring up the application to log it in, it automatically default, even though I've told them repeatedly, power chair, it defaults automatically.
What if you remove the manual chair? I mean, this is the kind of stuff I'm talking about. And this the patronization of the customer won't know what she's doing.
What I'm saying is, and I've actually talked with them about exactly this thing. Mm-hmm. Can we remove that? Can we just click it over to get, keep it on a power chair? And according to theirs, at least according to our system, the answer is no.
I think in summary,
we have a lot of great advocacy to do. Yeah. But Sheila, my friend, I think we need to move on.
It's fine.
Yeah.
The only thing I want to add, I want to emphasize is the medical model isn't the best. And also the patronization and how the drivers are trained to be over amped about being right on top of us. It makes me not want to ride when I probably should ride.
I always tell the drivers, you do not have to count 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. we have a driver that taps on. We have a driver that taps on everything. She's like, tap. It's right here. Yeah. Right here. Tap. I was like, no, I'll do that. We have to tell.
The other day, I had a driver, Shaneer, who said, "Don't move." And I said, "What do you mean?
Stop!
I have to help you up the steps."
Yeah.
You don't, and I just ran down those steps like.
Yeah. No, that's what we do.
Like, oh,
and I'm really forward sometimes.
Polite, though. I explained her. I said, every person is different, and just because we're all blind, it doesn't put us in the same category. And if you want to assist, that's great. Ask if we need assistance, please.
Yeah, exactly. Anyone
don't assume anything.
Okay, so I would like to know if there are any other hands up, Desi.
Okay. Next up, we have Janie Gibson Barrows.
Okay. All right.
Ooh, it's another Cowboys fan.
For the blind.
Hey Janie.
How are you?
This is along the realm of transportation and filling out the the forms and going to the doctor and having them, you know, verify. I find in, for those of you who don't know, I work at a Valley Center for the Blind. So we assist as best we can for our clients for our Handy Ride or our Clovis Roundup. But what I find, and it's very upsetting to people, because most of them are on Social Security, very low income, and the doctors, some of these doctors out there, what they charge to fill out the paper is really a concern of mine, because I see it firsthand with the clients that are stressed out. They can't get their transportation filled out because of the cost. Just they have to save. It might take them a couple months, you know, to get that kind of income. Is there anything out there that anybody's working on or even know of to help with being more consistent throughout the medical field on filling out medical papers for this and other services that require them as well?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean,
that's a good question.
I know that was my big argument for the renewals, you know, people with permanent. That's what I was telling her. But I was like, people are getting charged for something they don't need to be getting charged for. But all across the board, yeah, that is a good idea.
Can one of your social workers or counselors provide proof of disability? And would that be enough, especially for people who are blind and go to
That's a Shanir question.
Yeah, Shanir.
Yeah, the orientation and mobility specialist. Orientation and mobility.
Right.
O&M.
Yeah, orientation and mobility, absolutely. But, you know, not all of our clients have, you know, they're brand new. They haven't, you know, gone through, you know, they're just signing up. They don't have a mobility. They're not a part of the department of rehab. You know, it's the exception, not the rule kind of thing. And when
they almost get caught in that vicious cycle to where they don't have anything yet to get them in that door.
Yeah. You make up a good point about the charging for filling out forms.
Yeah.
I'm not sure of any like advocacy effort that's around that, because most doctors charge for, you know, any form like going to camp and whatnot. So that's pretty much a standard thing. But what I would say is, remember, there are a list of several types of people that can fill out the form for you, so you can do a little work to find someone maybe who won't charge you.
Right.
As well, but I do like the idea of advocating for no charging on
paper.
I'd like that idea. That's maybe a fight we should start.
Yeah, because it applies not only to paratransit, but other types of services.
Right.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying overall, because
I
get
$75 for some people.
I can't speak for everybody here, but we do assist people in filling up whatever forms. But you know, if we're talking about the actual physicians doing it themselves, that, you know, advocating for either a reduced or no fee process, that, you know, that is something that I think we need to really look at.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good ideas. And we will, won't we?
Yeah, we will.
We will.
We will.
Before we continue, Sarah, do we have time for another question or two?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
I had to look at the time first.
It's about
2:30.
Yeah.
We've got about four hands, so
all right. So let's go on, Desi.
Yeah. So let's take these four hands, but let's try to you know wrap them up and
absolutely.
And then after that, we're going to open it up for some fun. And Shanira, I didn't get to ask you to do something, but I'm going to ask you to do something. So just hang around.
Oh, boy, I'm scared.
Okay, so next up is Shayna.
Thank you. Last time I tried to fill out the
paratransit application. It was a while back, but I would have had to lie to and say that I was incapable of taking the bus. Has that changed?
Any comment about that?
Has it changed? I mean, I think that's like I mentioned earlier, you know, it comes down to you saying that you're visually impaired or disabled. Just say, yeah, I'm incapable. You know, it's not, don't leave it in their hands to decide.
Sometimes I can take the bus and sometimes, you know, sometimes I can't find the stop and things like that. It feels dishonest to say I'm incapable of taking the bus.
Nah, I understand, but, you know, like my opinion, honestly, I know it sounds harsh, but who cares, you know? I mean, if it's going to come down to you being in the mercy of somebody that doesn't understand being disabled, just say you can't.
And I will definitely speak to that. My primary disability has always been my cerebral palsy, but the glaucoma affects me far more because I can't do as much as I used to. I used to be able to drive, all that. So, you know, having to lean more heavily on the fact that I can't see as well as I used to, it was very hard at first because there is a certain amount of pride involved, I guess you could say. I am saying, yeah, I can do that, but now I can't. And, you know, I understand your consternation, but, you know, in order to be able to have the service at first, in the first place, far better just to lean on the idea that I can't do this.
Yeah. I get what the lady was asking, though. I mean, I get the feeling of feeling dishonest, but if that's your transportation, you know.
Shaneer, could she just say, I'm blind and I have issues taking the bus in unfamiliar areas?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I get a lot of applications like that, and me knowing that, understanding that, it's never been an issue for me, but I get where, because like I said, previous people that worked at my agency and other places, I understand where you can't be put in a crapshoot over that.
I mean, rather than saying that she's completely incapable of taking the bus, just saying in those particular circumstances, would that be sufficient? Yeah.
I mean, you know, yeah, word it right. Say I have very limited situations to where I'm able to use the city bus, you know, just, you know.
Okay.
So there's only a certain amount of certain situations where I'm able to ride the city bus. Say, only.
Right.
Right,
and even if you're sometimes not able to take the bus, that's not necessarily a lie per se.
Yeah.
So I would just go ahead and say it. I mean, I get it, but to Christine's point, like if that's what you need to do to get around, then that's
around.
So.
If you get denied, give me a call at Fax Andy right now.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll have a talk to that person because that drives me crazy when people act like, oh, they don't need it. I'm like, what?
Same thing for anybody here in Santa Clara County.
I think the problem here, Shayna, is that, as we said earlier, the majority of people who work in these transit agencies are people who don't have the lived experience, and they really don't understand disability, and they really, I think, they shouldn't have the right at all to determine eligibility because of their lack of understanding, because they will often make mistakes. So you raise a good point, Shane, and thank you so much.
All right, next up we have Livy.
Great job, you guys. Shaneer, you're on it, as always. I just wanted to make a comment. You're welcome, hon. And I've noticed a lot of our drivers for Handy Ride, when they come up to, you know, to pick me up in the van, they'll come out of the van, at least because of the, they're trained to do this from the agency that they're, you know, the private company they're working with.
Yes.
They'll come up to me and they'll say, do you need assistance to get the bus? And 9 times out of 10, I will say yes. And, you know, just take my elbow. I'll take your elbow and they guide me to the, you know, and I'm fine to get on. And after that, I'm fine, you know. And I just wanted to comment on that to say that that's what a lot of our drivers do. Now, on the other hand, many years ago, we had a driver and this is something that you need to remember as patrons. We had a driver that, in fact, Jan Carmichael and I were on the same van. And this driver was drunk or had been drinking because you could smell it. And we both put a complaint in on that driver, and that driver was removed. You know, and that is something, because if you, you know, sometimes they'll try to hide the booze and stuff, and you got to be real careful. But a lot of times, if you know, you can smell it. So be aware of your surroundings with what the driver is doing and stuff like that. Because if you smell anything like that, you make a complaint, because that means you're not under a safe driver.
Thank you, Libby. Next.
I can honestly say that that's one thing to where our Fresno, our contractors, they're going by the name We Drive You. Yeah, they, one thing I got to compliment them, whether they wouldn't tolerate that at all.
Right. Next, any other hands?
Okay, yes, we have a couple of hands.
Next.
Oh, okay, next up is Brandon. Go ahead, Brandon.
We're doing a lot of Fresno today, Brandon.
I was just thinking that too. Like, got the whole crew out today. And shout out to Chenier, right?
Hey, what's up, Brandon?
Not much. Well, actually, I guess a lot technically, but not much. Just enough.
Yes.
But I wanted to share, you know, something that, because I know previously when during introductions, Sarah wanted, you know, some good stories too, right? Not just not, you know, because right, let's so be real, we could
Brandon,
all
Brandon, we're gonna do that in a little bit,
yeah. All right, I'm saving bit. My good story then.
Save your good story, and you get to go first.
Yeah, we want to hear it.
All right, then. Shout out to the panel. You guys are awesome, and it's just stating the obvious, because you know, just like this, just the understanding that there is always something that can be bad about any situation, right? Mm-hmm. It is always a wonderful thing knowing that we have people like all of you who are on the inside and know lived experience and just understanding. And I mean, I know personally, just from my, you know, being friends with Chenier, I can't tell you how many times I've heard stories of the fights that he's fought just locally for us. Same with Sarah. So it's honestly a blessing knowing that all of you are elsewhere as well, doing the same fight.
You can count on that.
We're a scrappy bunch. We're a scrappy bunch of
friends. Appreciate that.
Any further hands? One more.
Oh yes, we have about three. So okay, next is area code 818.
Excuse me, David. Good afternoon.
Sure. Sam. How are you?
I am unfortunately not in your region, so I am not from Fresno. I am from LA.
Neither are we.
So exactly, I use Los Angeles paratransit. Mm-hmm. Which is probably one of the largest, if not the largest, in the state. The question I have is twofold. One, I use a service dog. I use a guide dog, and I have not heard anybody talk about a guide dog. Because the approach with service animals is a tad different than a white cane or anything else. The other thing is, so I want to know how you guys, when you're working with the eligibility and you're filling out helping people get their applications and you're doing interviews, how do you discuss the service animal? How do you discuss the guide dog? Because I have been using guide dogs for 20 years and taking paratransit, and I had to retire my first dog because the driver made a sharp turn and slammed her into the ramp.
Oh,
and what he told me after this was done was, oh, she's just a dog.
Wow.
Well, that got me involved. But that got me involved with paratransit right there, just that one line.
Yeah.
The other one is ramps. My dog will not, and when I say will not walk up a ramp. It took me 6 years to talk them into unlatching the ramp and allowing us to step in. Because they used to say, well, the dog has to get can step in, but you have to use the ramp. And I would just give them a look like, that's so stupid. But found out that it is not a policy. I don't have to use the ramp as somebody who is ambulatory. Right. I do not have to use the ramp. So the second question would be, how do you guys approach somebody who is ambulatory and uses a guide dog, and how do you deal with service animals?
That's I'll take this one.
Because
Chenier?
Okay, go for it.
This one got me fired up because I have a guide dog. Now I'm on my second guide dog, Mr. Barnaby. He was the one playing around in the background through this whole discussion. But number one, we have a list of mobility aids on our app. And if they just check a service animal, that's it. You know, I've advocated pretty hard at our agency that if they have a service animal, they have a service animal. It is not our business to pry about it. We get asked them, of course, what service does it provide and all that. And if it is a service animal, and that's it. You know, and I told them the guidelines that the dog does have to be behaved under control and well kept, and that's it. We have to leave it alone. And as far as the using the ramp or the stairs, I make it well clear that it is the client's prerogative and choice. If they want the lift or the stairs, it is nobody's business to tell them which one to use or not to use.
And I'd like to add to that. So I agree. I fully agree with exactly what you've been saying. I also like to add that the I serve on the our local PCC, so it's the Committee for Transportation and Mobility Access. And what we emphasize to the staff members and the operators of the vehicles is that, and it's even stated in the handbook, that folks that have service animals. Number one, follow the lead of the owner. And if they choose to use the ramp, that's fine. If they choose to step up, that's fine. At all times, you are to respect the animal. And that animal is a working animal. It is not a pet. And therefore, they should not be treated as a pet. That's one thing. The other thing that I would say is we also have had incidences, unfortunately, where the driver was either not in the know, which I have a hard time believing since they are working for this company and, you know, presumably had been working for the company for a while. So why didn't they know the policy? But at the same time, I have seen incidences where the customer and the animal are not respected. The animal is not treated with respect. You know, obviously the animal has to be under constant monitoring by the owner, but at the same time, you know, this is a service animal. This is a working animal. And if you encounter situations where it doesn't turn out the way it should, i.e., you know, following your lead, responding to, you know, wanting to use a ramp or not, respecting the space of the animal, then you need to let them know right away. You need to call the company and make aware of the issue and really emphasize that at all times, every driver should be should maintain their professionalism in working with the animal. And if they can't, any service animal, if they can't do it, then they need to think about going, because honestly, we're going to get service animals of whatever ilk, whether they are guide dogs or service animals to assist in picking things up. Any animal that is there as a service animal should be respected.
Yeah, what I would say too is a follow up to that is don't be afraid to know, and everyone should know their company's complaint process. So if these things happen, you know right away to follow up and file a complaint and take notes. If nothing else, to know that it's there for the record and that you tried to do something and that it gets on the driver's record for such, yeah.
Okay.
Oh boy.
Okay. Yeah, somebody this did. Is...
Mother. I'll shut up.
How many more?
We have four. We have four more hands up. So let me know how many you want to take or any.
Sarah, you think we should end it here?
I think we're going to have to end it here for so panelists too. Because I'm sure that folks have some funny stories. So unfortunately, guys, we'll have to follow up on your questions. So please reach out to me and I'll connect you with our great panel.
At least for me, I'm happy to provide contact information, and I think to be
same here.
Sarah has it as well. Yep. So I'll hook them up for sure.
Can I, Sarah? Can I thank our panel because they were marvelous today? I'd like to thank Shaneer and Fiona and Christine. You were great, and thank you so much for all of your answers. You were thorough and detailed, and I really appreciate your participation.
Sure.
Thank you for having us. It was fun.
Yeah, thank you.
Especially when it comes to service animals, man. It gets me fired up just with this. Probably go another hour and talk about just that alone. Man, so.
Exactly. This can go on and on and on, I'm sure. And I really want to thank all of you. I think it was a fantastic presentation and panel and great discussion. All right. So we're going to switch things up a little bit, and we're going to move on to the funny side of paratransit. Funny stories about paratransit rides. And Shaneer, I really would love for you to open it up with the story about when you got picked up from my house and the bus broke down. You know which one I'm talking about?
Oh, was it last summer?
Yeah.
And it all was like 100, Bobby was 110. We just ate a boatload of our ice cream. And the bus breaks down right for the next pickup's house. But luckily, they let us hang out on the porch. They got us water. But I was starting to feel sick. I mean, it's like middle of the afternoon in Fresno. About it was 110 degrees. I just ate a big old ice cream sundae. This driver, you know, just whatever. He's kind of annoying. He actually just got let go for getting a DUI. Not while working, but off duty. But it was an interesting situation. I went from being really cool, hanging out at Sarah's, playing video games, eating ice cream sundaes, and all of a sudden I'm like trying not to puke on myself because I'm sitting outside in 110 degree weather, you know? Yeah.
Oh,
and so tell them about the house, though. The people.
Yes. I guess these people sell hamsters. They had like 100 hamsters in the living room.
Wow.
And they even asked us, like, God. You guys want to buy some hamsters? I love it. Even the driver's like, hey, dude, they got like a bunch of cages of hamsters in the room. He's like, they're like, oh boy, that's interesting.
Wow.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's the best. Hamsters for sale. Yeah. Oh my goodness. All right.
I got a quick funny story from a driver. He's a really cool guy. He's a dog friend of ours. Our driver, Damien, one time he picked me up on a Friday morning to go to work. You know, it's casual. We could just casual on Fridays, right? So just talk with dude, right? We were talking about all kinds of stuff. And I get off to go in the office, and he's like, hey, man, I hate to tell you, you got two different types of shoes on. I did, too. It's so funny.
Damien looks out for us, because one time I was getting on the bus, and he's like, sir, you have two different color socks on. I said, but they're both gray, right? And he says, yeah, but they're different shades. And I said, it's fine.
Yeah, I went the whole day with two different shoes. I was just Punky Brewster for a day. I didn't care.
Exactly. All right, Desi, do you think we could get Brandon up first? Is that possible?
Yeah, we promised him he could be the first after Shaneer.
But my it's ironically funny, not as good as Shaneer's hamster story, which, by the way, I know what I'm getting you next spring for Easter. I actually had a situation with a driver in Visalia, because I'm actually a little south of Fresno, and so which Visalia and any of the surrounding little cities, it's one of those situations where everybody knows everybody to a degree. You can't go anywhere without seeing somebody you know. All pun intended, because I never see people that I know. I always hear them. So this driver, I had him a few times, you know, way back, and you know, always very nice, very, you know, very cordial, very casual, and I think just, you know, one day he kind of wanted to, he asked me, you know, about my eyes, like my sight, and he was like, oh, one of my good friends from grew up with, you know, running around town, he's got something where he slowly, you know, loses his sight, you know, as he's gotten older. And I was like, oh, what's his name? And so he says his name, which I'm not going to say here because I'm, you know, wide, you know, broadband you know, base. Turned out to be my cousin. Sorry, my wife is trying to tell me something, but she's not using words because she knows I'm unmuted, so I'm trying to figure out what she's saying. So he had been a childhood friend of my cousin's for an exceptionally long time. And it was a weird, like, situation of, like, small world. And it was just super funny because he was just a great person before even knowing any relation to my, you know, cousin. And, but yeah, so the whole point of that story was, you know, there's... A lot of the good drivers sometimes get looped in with the not so good, and even though there's a million different things that you can say about a bunch of different scenarios that could or would or has happened, there's always those good ones who have a good conversation with you while you're there. You know, if you're a social person. And the really good ones know when you're not in a social mood and let you just do your thing, right? And Sam, who is the driver from that I'm referring about, he always knew when I was having a good day and wanted to talk, and he knew if I was like stressed out and just, you know, it let me be me.
Put the headphones on and listen to music, right?
Exactly. Brandon,
thank you for sharing that. That's so funny. I figured it was going to go that way. And
I'm going to tell my story now because I remember how liberating it was before GPS, because the company couldn't watch the drivers all the time. They had their Thomas Brothers maps, you know, out, and and it was great. So there was one day I was going to a wedding and we had time to kill. And so I invited I said, well, are you busy? What's your schedule? And she said, oh my God, I got all these hours and all that. So it was great. We went to breakfast and then, and then we went and I don't know, I had to buy some things for the wedding. We brought, you know, I was buying a gift that I had to pick up. And so when I went to the store with her and she helped me because she said, no, what they picked out for you really doesn't look very, you know, it would be better if you got this than that. And we just had a great old time and you can't do that anymore. And it was fun.
Well, you know, you say you can't do that anymore, but you'd be surprised. We figure ways out to do those things. So.
You're lucky.
And I just heard Lisa, so Lisa, in a couple minutes, we'll do a door fight.
Good.
Yay. All right. So, Desi, who do we got next?
Next is David Jackson.
All right.
Go ahead, David.
Hi, San Francisco chapter, yay. David?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right.
I don't necessarily have anything funny to say about paratransit, although I have to admit that when they did good, they were very good. They were able to get me from one place to another. And they cut my time from an arterial from an hour and a half to 20 minutes. Wow. So that was pretty good here in San Francisco. So I have to give them credit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's beautiful.
Boy, yeah. I love it.
Yeah. but they still need to do a lot. So
yes.
Oh yes.
And yeah. And what I was gonna say was related to the last segment. So we'll just keep it at that. Okay, folks.
Thanks, David. Thank you, David. And I'll connect you if you would like me to.
That's fine. Yeah. Great.
Awesome. Thanks.
You're welcome. Cool.
All right.
Good. Next.
Okay. We have three hands. Do we have time for all of those?
No, we're only going to do those three hands. But yes, we have time for those. So we're going to do one hand. And then Lisa, are you here to do a door prize after the hand?
I am here.
Yay, awesome. Lisa. Right. We missed you. So
we'll do the one hand.
I missed you guys too.
We were calling you.
Okay, so next I think was Pam, 818.
Yep.
All right.
I'm here. I have a funny story about a driver. Now, he picked me up in L.A. This guy is deathly afraid of dogs. Franklin, and those who know my dog, laying on the floor with his paws crossed, looking at him like, you're an idiot. my friend told me that's how Franklin was looking at him. So the whole time home, it's about an hour to get me home. I'm afraid of dogs. Is he going to bite me? Is he going to touch me? Is he going to bite me? Is he going to move? Oh, he moved. Oh, his paw moved. Oh, my God. And by the time he pulled up in front of my house, I said, dear, please, you need to stop driving. Go get some drugs or some alcohol, I don't know which, and calm the F down. And the whole time, my friend is telling me, Franklin's just laying there looking at him like, he's an idiot.
Oh my god.
That's it. Oh, talk to you
that's
guys
great, Pam.
Thank you, Pam. On that, Lisa, we got a door prize for us.
I have a door prize. $25 gift card. Generously given by GSGDHI.
Woo!
There we go. Okay, let's get this wheel spinning. And our winner is Theodore Wilbrich. Congratulations, Theodore.
Ooh. Hooray, hooray. Awesome. Thank you, Madam Treasurer.
You're welcome, ma'am.
All right. Who's our next hand, Desi?
I believe this next person is Roger, area code 650.
Roger. Hey.
Roger, try to tell you.
Yay.
Okay, I just wanted to tell you that if there's anyone listening here who's from the Monterey area, Monterey County, and knows a driver named Robert Peterson, I want to hear all reports about him because he's my grandson.
You hear that, everybody? If you're in Monterey, you get Robert Peterson.
Go tell
on in to Roger. Oh, that's great! Thank you, Roger. Thank you.
That's great.
Good to hear your voice, Roger.
All right. Who do we got next?
Christine Fitzgerald is saying that she's glad to hear your voice.
Yeah. Okay. Oops.
Okay.
Our next
anyway, I think he's a pretty good kid, but maybe you can improve him.
Okay, who's next, Desi?
Okay, next is Nellie Emerson.
Ooh, all right.
Hi, everybody.
Nellie!
Yay! I just ate a Cadbury cream egg.
Sugar rush.
Oh, my God. Wired for sound.
I have a very funny story to tell. I used to live in Yorba Linda in Orange County, and so I used the OCTA paratransit quite a bit to go back and forth to work and to go to the gym and other places. Well, this one day, I was coming back from the gym that was located in Fullerton, and I had a ride going to Yorba Linda. So I got picked up, and then they picked up another individual who was blind. And it's not that far from Fullerton to Yorba Linda. And we drove and we drove and we drove. And the other person on the bus, this guy goes, "Hey, man, this is a really long ride. Where the blank are we going?" And I said, "I don't know." But I had my Braille Note PK that had a GPS. And I turned it on. And it was reading me the road we were on, the direction we were going, the streets, and we were already in Orange County, clear by Long, in LA County, clear by Long Beach.
Oh my God.
We're passing Cherry and we're passing Long Beach Boulevard. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Oh my. And I told the other person, he goes, "Oh, you know." So anyway, I told the driver, "Hey, do you realize where you are?" And he goes, "Oh, well, the next intersection is us." I says, "Well, you know what? You're totally out of Orange County and you're going the wrong way." I says, "Where in the heck are we going anyway?" You know, anyway, so he had to turn around and take a very long trip of about over an hour during rush hour at that point to get back to your Belinda to drop me off and to drop this other person off. But that was so bizarre. And I couldn't believe it. Anyway, that's the story.
Love it.
Going on a tour of Southern California.
Yeah, yes. That's right.
Okay, so I'm going to share my funny story. And so in Fresno, we also have sedans. And we had this really great sedan driver. Her name was Phyllis. She was great. She picked me up and she said, "Sarah, we're going to pick up like three other people." And I'm like, "What?" She's like, "Yeah, I don't know what they're doing." And I said, "Well, we'll figure it out. I'll sit in the middle in the back. It'll be fine." And so we get the first person and they go in the front. And then the next person, you know, sits next to me. And then we go to pick up this last person. And I scooted over in the middle. They got in, and I was like, "Where are we picking this guy up from?" Because he got in, and he had all of his medical marijuana. Mind you, this was years ago, so it was before recreational. So he had all of his medical marijuana, and so the whole car, yeah, smelled like pot. It was fantastically funny. Yes. So that was cool. Oh my goodness, this is so much fun. You know, every time that, you know, we all get together for convention, it's a time where, you know, we get to, you know, really experience each other and share, and this is what it's all about. And so I really want to thank all of you who participated. I want to thank the panelists as well. You guys were great. This evening at 5:30 p.m., we will have our awards recognition banquet, and there'll be a few surprises. And I really hope that folks can come or listen on ACB Media 8. I also want to remind folks that we have our business meeting tomorrow, too. That's going to be a time where you're going to need to be available for any voting, just in case, you know, something comes to a runoff, or also on all of our resolutions and our bylaw amendment that we have this year. And so with that, we're going to listen to a Hall of Fame video when Steve is ready, and then we're going to close out this session. So thank you, everybody. And Steve, are you ready?
Thank you all.
Welcome to the Hall of Fame History Project as we celebrate our 90th anniversary.
Thank you for joining me, Roger, to share a little bit about these wonderful people in the California Council of the Blind. And, you know, I was so honored to meet you and Bernice and talk to you both at length
I want to tell you that you have both inspired and taught me so much and just shared so much with me. But overall, the most that you did was encourage me on my leadership in CCB.
I first worked with Bernice in 1978 at the ACB convention in Salt Lake City. She was named the chair of the nominating committee, and I was the official assistant for Braille. In those days, we didn't have computers, so some of the resolutions were in Braille and some were in print, and we needed people to read, you know, each kind of thing. And so I got to working closely with her over the resolutions and the Braille ones. In 1985, it ended up with Bernice and me being a pair. I remember the first time I met her family, her father's family. She was born in Fresno, in the Armenian community there. When we went there on the train, totally unbeknownst to us, or at least to me, her aunt was there to meet us at the train. And one of her aunts, who then took us to the house of one of the other aunts, and there was a third aunt there. And we were given things to eat, you know. And I said, Fresno must be all Armenian. One of the things that she had was office-type skills. And the thing that was brought home to me on that was, in the stuff we were cleaning up, we found a letter from a lawyer saying that her letter that she wrote for him got him a job as a lawyer. She used to work at the Arizona State University Law School. And, she could type and do that kind of stuff. And in the organization, she's the one who typed up the bylaws, for example, for the students, for the CCLVI, for the government employees, for our chapter here, the Silicon Valley chapter. She that kind of organizing and preparing things was something. But I remember after we got our chapter, Silicon Valley chapter accepted by CCB. I sat down on a chair which had the membership placard for the chapter. I sat down and broke it.
And Bernice was instrumental in starting CCLVI, or?
A lot of the time, she was president for a little while, but a lot of the time, she was kind of like the person who decides who should be president. That was how things work. Bernice had a way of working things. And I don't know how to describe it exactly, but he certainly did work a lot of things. When we were cleaning up after Bernice, she had lots of stuff. And we found in one of our storage units, in the box, IBM's Selectric 2 typewriter. And the box was all labeled for mailing to Mac Riley. Apparently never was mailed. She worked for a good while we were in D.C. She worked at the downtown Social Security office, which was like a block from the White House, That was an interesting time when we lived in Washington, D.C. Because it was in walking distance of her office, and we were in walking distance of the mall and the White House. And we used to go to the Marine Band concerts on the mall, and the Marine Band conductor always came over and said hello to us, every time I think about the fact that this condo of mine is mine, I finished the mortgage, all mine, and I give Bernice a lot of credit for that, and give her credit for my getting a good job and, doing my 401k and all that stuff, too. So I ended up in reasonable shape in my old age here. There was also, I should mention, the women's issue. Bernice tried her best to get women's stuff started. And you may remember that she had a women's luncheon at one of the conventions we had in Los Angeles. We had the lady there who spoke at our luncheon. And a lot of people were there because they wanted to see her, because she was the star. She was on an old sitcom on TV. The last She was in the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors.
What name did Durward McDaniel give Bernice?
Durward called her Kendu Kangari.
So the first one I'd like to introduce to you is Roger Peterson. Roger Peterson not only helped to form our chapter along with Bernice Kandarian many years ago in their apartment, but he was and continues to be one of the founding fathers of California Council of the Blind. He has brought advocacy to us and to consumers along with Bernice, with one of the most recognized accomplishments is the accessibility of ATMs, which today continues to be something that helps all of our members, not only in California, but beyond, in being able to access their money. That's just one of the examples of the legislative initiatives that Roger has brought to our community. Roger is also the well-known parliamentarian of California Council of the Blind, and we typically look to him for advice and to verify that we are staying true to our mission. Our mission of California Council of the Blind is to support individuals in California who are blind or have low vision through advocacy and community.
I originally met Roger Peterson in the late 80s when he was working at Telesensory Systems in California, and I happened to visit there one time, and he was there, and that's when I met him. But I didn't really get reacquainted with him to a great degree until I got more active in CCB in the early 90s. And then, of course, we started interacting in various capacities. Roger's been very active. I think he was one of the people who was very involved in the early days of the Silicon Valley Council of the Blind, and that has been a strong chapter for many years now, and he's been very involved there with, of course, with his partner, Bernice Kandarian. He was also active on a number of committees, especially Constitution and Bylaws was a main area of Roger's focus, as well as the Technology Committee. I believe he's been on the board, and I believe he's also was even second vice president at one time. Roger has been very active in the council for many years, not only locally, but also nationally. He was originally a member of the Federation, like so many people, and he has a story to tell about how he was kicked out of the Federation because he had the temerity to want to get involved in disability coalitions, contrary to the wishes of leadership. So they, because they were mad at him, they kicked his whole chapter out. and so then he got involved with ACB, and he's been a major contributor to our organization ever since. Roger is a fairly soft-spoken guy, but he has quite a sense of humor. He's very intelligent, a very kind and considerate person. He's been a great asset to CCB, and he well deserves his position in the Hall of Fame.
We'll be back later with another episode from our Hall of Fame History Project.
I really like that. That was a good one.
Thank you, everybody.
If I may, I'd like to say I work with Roger on the Silicon Valley Independent Living Center's board. So I know the man. And I know his dedication, and he is a great, great person.
He's amazing, that's for sure.